Carnivores Don't Get Sunburn. Hosted by Carrie Mann. Dive into the extraordinary journey of rediscovering optimal health through the carnivore diet. Here, we share powerful transformations from reversing chronic illnesses to achieving peak human potential. Each episode, we'll explore the real stories of those who've turned their lives around, embracing a diet that's as natural as the sun. Stay tuned as we uncover the science, the success stories, and the secrets to thriving on this ancestral diet. Plus, don't miss our exciting documentary highlights featuring a diverse range of carnivore champions. Ready to challenge the conventional? Let's get started.
I feel like this is a movement and I want to be part of it. I know how difficult it can be to change. I know how people can put up with so much pain in their lives and just not have a way out. So I wanted to apply that wisdom that I've learned in the trenches as a rabbi to the carnivore journey. You can't force somebody to change. You're not going to tell somebody this, but if you show through your own life the change that it has created in you, that's the way to teach somebody. That's the way to inspire somebody. The world as it is broken. We live in a broken world, but we can heal that world. We can heal humanity step by step. We're God's partners in doing that. God entrusts us with the obligation to heal humanity.
Could you tell us your carnivore story?
Yeah. It started...
Hello and welcome. Carrie here from Healing Humanity, the Power of a Proper Human Diet. And I'm honored to have carnivore Rabbi Evan on the channel. How's it going?
Oh, it's going great, Carrie. Such an honor and joy to talk with you.
I had a great conversation with you the other day. You asked me some of the best questions I've had. I really enjoyed that interview. I'm looking forward to hearing your story. It's all about the documented stories, individual stories that really get me inspired. It's a reason I'm doing this documentary. So I wanted to learn more about your story, how you found carnivore and things like that. So maybe if we could start out, before we jump into your carnivore story, can you just talk briefly a little bit about your background, your profession? Like, what exactly is the role of a rabbi in your community?
Yeah, that's great. I mean, when I chose the YouTube name Carnivore Rabbi, I was pretty certain there wouldn't be any more. There wasn't another one. But a rabbi is a spiritual leader. It's the Jewish equivalent of a pastor or a priest. So I have a synagogue. We have about 650 families, couples, some singles, just over households, we call them, that are part of it. And I teach, do a lot of teaching about Jewish history, Jewish values. I lead worship. So every Friday night and Saturday morning, we have worship services. That's the Jewish Sabbath. I do a lot of weddings and bar and bat mitzvahs. That's a Jewish coming of age ceremony. I do a lot of counseling. You know, people come to me, they're struggling with something. Could be family issues, could be grief. I preside over funerals. So it's one of the things that I love about being a rabbi is it's every day is different. And so I really get to be with people at really wonderful moments. Like I just did a beautiful wedding last weekend. And then difficult moments where I can really help people and help them get through difficult times because we all face those times. And I've been at the same synagogue now for 15 years, just celebrated 15 years at the synagogue. So I've really gotten to know families over time, you know, seen kids from age 13 when they become a bar mitzvah to being at their wedding. And so it's I'm very lucky with what I do. I feel blessed.
That's wonderful. Yeah, you mentioned teaching, and that's kind of what I've learned from watching your channel. I've been watching it more recently since we did the interview together, and I really enjoy your channel. So for anyone watching, shout out Carnivore Rabbi. I'll have a link in the description below. But that's what I felt. You know, you can watch YouTube for many different reasons, for entertainment or finding value in learning something. And I feel like I'm learning or taking away wisdom when I'm watching your channel. I remember one video you did in particular where you're talking about people aren't going to change unless they do one of two things. It's either through inspiration or desperation. Yes. I'm like, yes, that just nailed it on the head right there.
Yes. Thank you, Carrie. That means the world, because I love your channel and have learned so much. And that's why I think there are so many good carnivore YouTubers out there, influencers, that I learned so much from. So I thought to myself, what do I have anything to offer? And part of it was, I feel like this is a movement and I want to be part of it. But another part is I've gone through so much with so many people. And just on a psychological level, I know how difficult it can be to change. I know how people can put up with so much pain in their lives and just not have a way out. And I've also been able to practice techniques for helping people get through that. So a lot of the same difficulties people experience in life, they experience trying the carnivore diet. So I wanted to apply that wisdom that I've learned in the trenches as a rabbi to the carnivore journey. And the challenges we face, how do we deal with a difficult relationship? You have to have patience. You have to look for what's causing it. You have to look at yourself. What are you doing to contribute to that? And the same things are true in carnivore. How are we getting in our own way? Are we addicted to certain feelings and certain sweets? And is eating processed food a way of just getting relief from the difficulties of life? And so being aware of that, and then how do we use strategies to change, to grow? Because to me, the nutrition part of carnivore is easy. Eat meat, drink water. I mean, it's not complicated. It's the psychological part. It's changing our mindset. It's dealing with social pressure. It's dealing with cravings. Those don't go away. It's dealing, you essentially have to be countercultural to be a carnivore, because the entire culture is about eating more, eating more junk. And so how do we develop that character strength? And that's where I felt I had something to offer.
Absolutely. Yeah. What a beautiful thing when you think about it too, because as a rabbi in the past, you were probably limited to the number of people you interact with on a daily basis at your synagogue. Yes. In a similar way to as a doctor, like Dr. Barry in the past, would be limited to the number of patients he sees in his clinic or hospital setting. But now Dr. Barry's reaching millions of people through YouTube, and you're able to reach far more people than you would have just individually. For all of the downfalls and negatives of social media, there are some really good positive things if you look for them.
When I think about that all the time. It would, because sometimes I think, because I have a daughter who has celiac, she's 17, and she went through a real rough patch eating wise. And I think to myself, oh, I wish I'd known about this 10 years ago. Then, I also feel grateful that because of social media, I know about it now, and that we wouldn't have the community, we wouldn't have the teachers, we wouldn't have the inspiration that we have in the carnivore space without social media. Yeah, it comes with its own problems, especially, we're both parents of teenagers. It comes with its own set of problems, but there's so much we gain from it, and we can touch more people. And it's and getting notes. Whenever I feel I have a file in Evernote, an app I use, that people send me after weddings, bar mitzvahs. And so whenever I'm feeling down, I'll look at some of those notes just to give me a little uplift and inspiration. And I've created the same thing with carnivore, that the notes that people have sent, the nice comments, it's a good feeling to know that we're able to touch more lives.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's wonderful. So maybe if we could you tell us your carnivore story?
Yeah, it started, I'd always had stomach pain. I remember it from middle school, just feeling just a weird feeling in my tummy, and it would never go away. I would sometimes, if I was running or working out or doing some sport, it would feel better, but it was always, every time I ate, I just felt, grumbling in my stomach. And over time, I just kind of put it up. I'm going to have this low grade chronic pain for my life. It wasn't debilitating. I could still function. I mean, be farting all the time, but I could hide it, be smart enough. I couldn't really drink milk because that would make it worse. So I just kind of figured out a way of managing this low grade pain. And I discovered keto in 2018, and keto was phenomenal. It was, and I lost most of my, because I know you talk about losing most of your weight on carnivore. I lost about, I lost about 25 pounds on keto, and that was great. But I was still addicted. I was addicted to keto sweets, especially this keto cookie dough and this keto granola. First of all, it's very expensive. And two, it was like keto ice cream. All this stuff kept me addicted to these sugar tasting foods. And the stomach pain never really went away on keto. So it was wonderful for a time. But then I saw a couple of videos, Dr. Chafee, Dr. Hampton. This is about 2.5 years ago. And I had always loved meat. I remember my mom, when I told her I was doing carnivore, my mom said, yeah, when you were a kid, sometimes you just asked for dinner just for ground meat. You know, nothing else. You just want a ground meat. And I was like, oh, that makes sense. So I'd always loved meat. And so I decided, let me give this a try. Keto's worked well. This is almost an extreme version of keto. And so this is 2.5 years ago. From the beginning, it was just instant wonder. And it wasn't losing weight, because that I'd already done. It was the mental clarity. It was the shift in mindset. And it was the stomach pain basically went away. My wife will testify to it. Like, you know, I would always complain about my stomach. I would have bad gas. And those disappeared with carnivore. And so that to me was the best benefit. And the mental clarity, I had never really realized I had brain fog. I mean, I started taking Zoloft when I was 20 because I sort of had mild OCD, and I stayed on that for a while. But I had ups and downs, but I didn't realize the brain fog that I had had. That, and you've said that, Carrie, you talk about, you don't realize what it is until you're out of it. And I felt that probably after, that was about 2 to 3 weeks. So that was the beginning of my carnivore journey. And I really have never looked back. I mean, there have been times when I've had a couple of extra carbs here and there. But over time, I've actually just gotten stricter because I see the benefits of it. And it's really been such a game changer. And you know, it's been hard. I think the hard part is I have a public life. You know, I go to a lot of events. I go to a lot of lunches and dinners. So dealing with I have a staff that I work. So dealing with sort of the fact that I'm doing this very, to them, not to me, but to them, sort of extreme way of eating, that can lead to some awkward conversations. But I have found that most people don't really care what you eat. Over time, they may be awkward for a second. They may be like, oh, okay, yeah, that's a little strange. But then, okay, sure, you just eat meat. That's fine. You have a conversation. And so I've kind of become more comfortable being uncomfortable for a minute and then going on with life as normal. And that's been that's almost strengthened my own sense of conviction, because I'm a people pleaser. I think when you're a rabbi, you know, you're always trying to, you know, you don't like confrontation. You don't like uncomfortable moments. And so sometimes you're willing to sort of set aside your own convictions to just connect with others. And I've kind of become more comfortable saying, you know what? I just eat meat, serve whatever you want, but this is what I'm going to eat. And that's me. And that's been a nice feeling. That's been a nice change in my own sort of sense of self.
Great. And so the question people always ask then is, could you kind of describe, what do you eat on a regular basis? Like what's a regular day of eating for you?
Right now, it's basically one meal a day, and a big meal, usually around 2 or 3. And I probably eat about 2 to 2.5 pounds of beef, maybe sometimes even more. Depends. I'm a high energy guy, so I work out almost every day. So if I've had a pretty intense workout, sometimes go up to 3 pounds. And I didn't always eat this way. It really started in January. I decided to do lion for sort of World Carnivore Month. And lion was so great, like just the mental clarity, that I decided, you know, it sort of naturally evolved into one meal a day. And Dr. Kiltz was also very, I mean, we both love Dr. Kiltz. he has some great videos on one meal a day. And I was persuaded by it. I felt it's good to give my body time to rest. And I think initially, I was never somebody who was comfortable fasting. You know, in Judaism, we fast. There's several fast holidays, and I hated them. Hated those. I mean, I liked the holiday, but I didn't like the fasting, and it was hard for me. And so when I started doing one meal a day, I'm like, I'm going to challenge myself. But when you're a carnivore, it's pretty easy. You know, it's not, I mean, it's, you know, there are some challenges here and there. So right now it's 2 to 2.5 pounds of beef once a day. Sometimes I'll have a carnivore bar for dessert. Sometimes I'll have some bone broth, but that's pretty much it. Simple, simple, simple.
Do you feel like carnivore diet is the diet all humans should be on? Or is it just that you and I are sort of unique? We both had similar issues with the brain fog and the stomach issues.
This is such an interesting question. I really do think we are. I'm persuaded by, I don't know if it was Bart Kay or one of those guys who said, maybe it was Dr. Barry, that every species knows what it's supposed to eat. And we are a species. We are mammals. And so we should intuitively know that we are supposed to eat meat and that that is the proper human diet. So that to me makes a lot of sense and it works for me. However, my wife, she's eating more beef, but she always says to me, sometimes I just don't feel like it. Sometimes I feel like I can't eat meat. It's like, and I see that occasionally. You see people who have meat aversions. Now I say to my wife, I probably shouldn't say this, but I'm like, no, you've just been brainwashed. You know, you've had to eat vegetables and fruits for so many years that you think you don't like me. I'm just BSing sometimes with her with that. But I do think it is appropriate. However, I think because of the Ice Age, because of overhunting, if you look at the history, we had to adapt and learn how to eat other things. You know, we learned how to eat berries. We learned how to eat grains, even though they're so there, we can certainly get by not eating a carnivore diet. And our brains are so malleable. Marketing is so powerful. And so I think that people have convinced themselves that they don't really need beef. Whereas I do think intuitively, if we were to just step back in time, get rid of all the toxins in the air, get rid of all the marketing, that we would know that this is our proper human diet.
Right. Yeah, the species argument and how every animal or how every species has a set diet. I always found that one very intriguing too. And then now that I'm carnivore more, just the weird thing about humans, when you go in a grocery store now and you look and you go down the beverage aisle and there's 4,000 types of beverage, and you go down, I've used this example before, you go down the bread aisle, there's 76 types of bread, you go down the ketchup aisle and we have 55 types of ketchup to choose from. It's gotten to such a weird place. Like, why do we have this need for such variety?
It's yes.
Really crazy. And like you said, no other species on this planet has that. And here we are, the apex predator, the big brain human, and we're messing it up so bad. It's kind of weird when you do carnivore for a while, you have these epiphanies sort of thing. Have you had any others like that where you look at the world differently now?
Oh, I absolutely. I feel I do. It's something you say often, Carrie, that resonates so strongly with me, is getting closer to nature, and that carnivore, we're not going to be able to go back to the hunter-gatherer days. Our lives are to evolve. Technology has changed. We are where we are. But when we are carnivore, that brings us closer to nature. And I think what I have realized over time, and this could also be a function of aging, you know, getting older, middle age, we human beings have so overcomplicated life, so much. You just said 60 different kinds of ketchup. The simplicity of carnivore, I try to bring that simplicity into other parts of life as much as I can, just in my own home, almost becoming.
Quick interruption. Thank you so much for watching. If you're interested in learning more about our documentary, Healing Humanity, The Power of a Proper Human Diet, or supporting it, please visit donate.healinghumanity.movie. Our goal is to reach millions of people that are hopeless right now, and sharing the examples of real people over the course of 1 year that are undertaking a proper human diet to overcome obesity, type 2 diabetes, depression, anxiety, fertility issues. We couldn't do it without you. We thank you so much. We are also selling these shirts, Healing Humanity, The Power of a Proper Human Diet. Every penny we get from those goes towards the documentary. And last, we have memberships. If you click the little join button, it's best to do it on desktop. Under any one of my YouTube videos, you can join and become a member. We have hundreds of members right now. We do members-only videos. We do members-only behind the scenes. You can email me as a member and I'll answer you. And every penny from that goes to support the documentary. And the last thing is, we have these Redmond's portable salt shakers. These things are awesome. You can get the best salt. You can take it with you. We sell these on the website along with our water bottles and cutting boards, and every penny from all of those goes 100% towards supporting the documentary. You can also sign up for our newsletter, which is completely free. All of these links are in the description below. Thank you so much for your support. Now back to today's video.
Definitely become more minimalist. You know, my wife and I were traveling. She's a rabbi also. So she was asked to do a bat mitzvah in Costa Rica, and that was awesome. And we had a wonderful time there, but you know, they put us up at this really beautiful, fancy hotel. It was out of this world, beautiful. And neither of us really liked it at all. We're like, this is just too much. This is not how we want to live our lives. This is not our values anymore. And so I think that carnivore has really brought me ground, made me more grounded as a human being, and to know what's really important in life. The relationships, you know, we're both inspired by Dante Ferrigno. And one of the things I love about when Dante was doing sprints with his son, you know, and just seeing that kind of carnivore creating these wonderful moments in life with the people we love. And that to me has been such a great benefit. So it has really changed my philosophy. It's made me just crave more simple things and find greater pleasure in simple activities. And that a lot of the things that we do in life are often distractions from what really matters. And really focusing on what matters. One thing that I've been playing around with lately is, you know, the clarity we feel as carnivores, when we go into a grocery store, we know exactly where we're going, the meat aisle and maybe the dairy aisle if we eat eggs and cream and stuff like that. So we know exactly where we're going. I want that same kind of clarity in life, you know, that we know exactly what we're looking for and how to get it. And I think I've gotten closer to that. Of course, you know, I don't know if anyone ever gets all the way there in life. I mean, life always throws us curveballs, but I definitely feel that, a greater sense of clarity in what matters.
One common theme I've found interviewing carnivores is this this newfound sense of gratitude they didn't have before. Everyone I've been interviewing, it's been really interesting. I interviewed a woman, Mimi. She had Parkinson's. She's carnivore now. She's just thriving. But she literally said, "Carrie, I wake up every morning with an overwhelming gratitude just to look at the sunshine in the morning." And I thought, that is such a beautiful thing. I imagine if all humans could experience that. Have you noticed anything change with you in terms of gratitude?
Oh, yeah. I've always tried to cultivate gratitude in my life because I've known that's such an important value. And as a rabbi, I feel much greater gratitude to the people I love, to my family. And I've noticed there's something really interesting. What you just pointed out about gratitude, you know, about, let's see, this was 7 years ago. I've written several books and it's great. I love writing. Writing is one of my passions. And when they were published, when you write a book, you've got to go get blurbs, endorsements from famous people to put on the book so that more people are likely to buy it. So I had, and the publisher doesn't do anything for you. You got to go do it yourself. It was the hardest, most frustrating thing. You write to all these people, no, 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 no. They're too busy. They're too famous. They don't have time for you. You're a nobody. I got so many rejections. And that was not fun. And you know, sometimes I would push, and then I would get a great endorsement, but it was few and far between. What I have found since I started, you know, started a YouTube channel, started talking with different carnivores, everybody says yes. This is such a loving, grateful, supportive community. I mean, including Dr. Chafee. I mean, this is a guy who is one of the busiest people in the world, is so, everyone wants a piece of him. Oh, replies to my texts, replies to emails. Incredible. And I have noticed this over and over again. And so I'm grateful for that. But I also think that that's something carnivore does. You just become more open and loving and supportive. It's not about status. It's not about influence to a degree. Yeah, I mean, people are busy, okay? You can't say yes to everybody all the time. There's important to set boundaries. But there is such a support and sense of community among carnivores. And I am incredibly grateful for that. It's been a good gift in my life. And I'm trying now to do that for everybody, you know, for people who send me emails, people who comment. There is a real sense of support and love in this community.
Yeah, there sure is. Dr. Chafee is a great example of that. I've noticed the same thing to the point where I'm like, how does he even manage to do this? Guys, doing neurosurgery by day, YouTube videos by night. And yeah, I don't think I've ever asked him something where he said no, including to bring it back full circle, the documentary. He was the first doctor I spoke to and the first person I said, I don't want to put you on the spot, but will you participate in the documentary? And he said, 100%. Yes. He didn't even think about it for a second. Yeah, he's incredible. It's interesting too, because I often think about that. It's like in life, you want to surround yourself with people you want to be more like, that you glean wisdom from. Or Dr. Chafee as an individual, as a doctor, I'm like looking at him. Obviously, he's very fit, but just his energy level, his words, his mind, his knowledge, all of that. I'm like, I want to be more like that guy. Yeah, so,
totally. He's got such a calmness too. He's so logical and you know, he can be impassioned when it's appropriate, but it really is wonderful. I mean, I think you can tell a lot about a person in how they carry themselves and he's not dogmatic. He doesn't say you have to do this. He just explains what he does and is just inspiring in his own example. I think we all strive for that, right? You've talked about this. You can't force somebody to change. You're not going to tell somebody this. But if you show through your own life the change that it has created in you, that's the way to teach somebody. That's the way to inspire somebody.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you said that. That, I don't know, that was a lesson I learned a long time ago that sticks with me. And I have zero doubts about you can never change another person. But like you said in that video, you can inspire them or hopefully they don't do it out of desperation. Sadly, a lot of people, it'll be desperation. And then I started learning more from other people like Lee Kopis, Kent Carnivore, or my friend Jeff DeProsperous. I used to just leave it at that, but now I get more passionate about it because I'm like, some people are going to wait until they're too desperate or until it's too late. And then you can't reverse it. You lose your colon or you're diagnosed with something that can't be reversible. So that's something I've struggled with doing this. I used to, you know, when you first start carnivore, you're just shouting it like everyone, like you got to do this, like see this thing. It gets to be too much for some people. So I've pulled back a little bit, but that is something I still
do. That's why the documentary is so important, because it has to be out there as an option. And that's why, who is it, Dr. Barry, who just encourages everybody to start a YouTube channel. You just have to be out there. You know, there's a culture. And if people know carnivore is an option, then when they're in those desperate times, they at least know it's there. Yeah. You know, and that's so important.
That's huge. For all of the various health reasons, I think it's important to have it as an option. I would have given anything to know about this when I had just horrible depression for so many years, just as a tool, because I was tinkering with keto at that point. And if someone had told me, hey, a very strict ketogenic diet could get rid of your depression forever, I'm like, I'll try anything. I'm sick of trying all these pills. But then when we started bringing cancer into the documentary, that was a huge turning point for me when I talked to Jeff DeProsperous. And his biggest message is, I'm not telling anybody that if you have cancer, you have to do carnivore and fasting like I am. I'm simply saying this should be an option. This should be a tool in the toolbox for someone that's diagnosed with cancer and they're hopeless, just as an additional tool. Sadly, most people don't know about it, but hopefully we'll be able to educate some people through the documentary. And it's like you said, it's all about inspiring people. That was the whole idea with this documentary. Not telling people to do carnivore. This isn't even like all of the science and history of carnivore or a proper human diet. It's more, it's just individual stories from many different people that are doing this. And hopefully it'll inspire people. So,
yeah. You asked also earlier about other ways carnivore sort of shape worldview. And what you, sometimes I've seen the truth is all often the opposite of what other people say. Or what the majority says. My grandpa used to say, and my grandpa was a doctor. I love doctors. I mean, you know, sometimes in the carnivore community, we demonize doctors. My dad is a doctor. My grandpa was a doctor. Obviously, the medical system today is so messed up, you know, but many doctors mean well. But the kind of advice that has come down, the idea of cholesterol being so bad, the idea of meat being bad, this When you become a carnivore and you see the difference it makes, it changes the way you look at conventional wisdom. You sometimes see what conventional wisdom says is often the opposite of what's true. And I've seen that in a lot of different areas of life, you know, in the news sometimes, in health, just in psychology, in so many things. It's sometimes if a lot of people are saying one thing, then look first at the opposite, and that's where you might find the truth. And that's a principle carnivore has reinforced for me.
I love that. I've always been kind of weird, and I've always done the opposite. So I think that's why carnivore works so well for me. But it seems like everything that's great in life is something that's outside of the social norm or a little bit different than what everyone else is doing. And that has been a big epiphany on carnivore too. Literally, it seems like everything is inverted. Everything is backwards. Everything is upside down. Had I done the opposite of everything I was told to medical advice wise, I would have been so much better off. And it sounds like I'm exaggerating when I'm saying that, but I'm really not. It really is the truth. It's kind of amazing how backwards everything is.
Yeah. And I'm also more excited for the future. You know, as you think about it, I mean, I joke with my wife. I'm like, I'm going to live forever now. Of course, we're not going to live forever. But, you know, you, there is a greater excitement. And, you know, as you get people who get, I remember reading this in a study, like people who are about 46, there's often a low point of happiness. And then it kind of starts to go up again as you get out of middle age. But I'm 46 now. I've never been happier, never been more excited about the future. And some of that's just, you know, good luck. And a lot of it, though, is just carnivore and the kind of outlook that it sparks in me.
Yeah, the same for me. I mean, I came from a very dark place with the depression and anxiety, and I would have given anything to just, I would see other people that in my head, I'm like, they're just normal. They're not hopelessly depressed. I would give anything to be like that. But on carnivore, I'm on the other end of the spectrum. I'm just full of joy, gratitude, happiness, and excited for the future. Like you said, it seems like so many, like everyone can agree or worry about aging. Everyone gets fearful of aging, but most of the problems with aging are from disease that we get from inflammation, from being chronically inflamed. And the fact that we have no inflammation or very little on carnivore, it's like, I'm not worried about those things. It's really interesting because I've been on carnivore for over a year now. And initially a lot of people do carnivore for an immediate reason. Like I want to lose weight. I don't want to be depressed anymore. I want to come over type 2 diabetes. And then they fix those things. And then there's always the tendency, well, I should go back to moderation now, or I should go back to what I was doing before, which I think is a very scary thing. I think that's why a lot of people end up yo-yoing. I did that for years on keto, but, my whole thing has shifted now, looking at the future and learning from people like Maggie that we interviewed for the documentary, not having to worry about dementia or Alzheimer's or cancer. Of course, I could still get any of those things, but I feel like the odds are drastically reduced. And even if I do get them, I'm almost like, what? Bring it on. Like if it happens, it happens. There's nothing I can do about it. But the fact that I'll be so much stronger and my immune system will be stronger, and I'll be ready to take it on more so than I would have been able to otherwise.
Yeah. So true.
Yeah, in terms of the documentary, the name is Healing Humanity. That was a question I always ask people. It's kind of a dumb question because I think we all know the answer, but I love to get other people's perspectives on it. So the question is, does humanity need healing?
Without question. I mean, this is, as a rabbi, I think about this all the time. I mean, I thought about this even before carnivore, but carnivore's made it. There's a Jewish idea called Tikkun Olam, and that means repair of our world. And the idea is that the world as it is broken. And it's similar to the Christian idea's original sin. It's a little different in Judaism, but that we live in a broken world, but we can heal that world. We can heal humanity step by step. We're God's partners in doing that. God entrusts us with the obligation to heal humanity, to Tikkun Olam. And so I think that carnivore is part of that. Absolutely. Humanity needs healing. I mean, look what just what happened on over the weekend with an attempted assassination attempt. Okay, I mean, I live in Chicago. There's violence every day. There's so much sickness and illness and disease. And then as a rabbi, I know some families look perfect from the outside. You know, they just, everyone's polished, everyone's good looking, everyone's smart, gets perfect grades, they make a lot of money, drive fancy cars, all that. You see that. But I know when people come to talk to me that it's never like that. And you know, some people have more pain than others, but everyone struggles. And so, yes, the humanity is in need of healing. And a lot of that comes from improper nutrition. You know, changing our diet isn't going to solve every world problem. Of course not. But it is a huge step to healing humanity. If we could return to that simplicity, to the proper human diet, we would get much, much closer. And I mean, anyone who lives in the world knows that. And so, yeah, that's why I'm so passionate about the documentary and passionate about carnivore.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely returning to a proper human diet isn't going to fix anything, like you said, for sure. But I agree with you. It's so many things stem from nutrition that we don't realize stem from nutrition. And it's not just sickness, not just getting cancer or diabetes or these other issues. But for example, like the assassination attempt, just crazy, insane, right? When we see these mass violence, horrible acts of violence on TV over and over again, I often think this is like a mental health issue. There's mental health problem. Like, I don't know how you could think otherwise. If someone's going to do something like that, there's clearly some sort of mental health issue there.
Huge.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of those mental health issues are rooted in nutrition. That's what I've been learning the more I've been doing this documentary and talking to Dr. Georgie Ede. Chris Palmer wrote the book on brain energy, and people with mental health issues, oftentimes it stems from nutrition and it's never diagnosed. And then they're put on medications. And sadly, sometimes they don't take the medications properly and end up with situations like school shootings or these other horrible acts of violence.
I think school lunches and school breakfasts are responsible for a huge amount of the problems we face in schools. I mean, I just heard this recently. There is no limit on how much sugar can be in public school lunches. There are limits on certain things. There's limits on fat. There's limits. There's no limit on sugar. And I mean, you know, all the soda machines. I mean, I went to high school. We had a big soda machine. There was always lines. Coca-Cola gives hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars to the school district so that they have the right to put those soda machines in there. And it's bribery, essentially. Yeah. And it's addicting and hurting people. And I don't blame the school districts. They need all the money they can get, of course. So they're going to take it. I mean, they shouldn't take it, but you know, you could see why a board would vote to take it. And so there's so much. I mean, the rise in mental illness has corresponded exactly to the rise in processed foods. There's no accident.
Yeah, absolutely. Mental illness, all of the things too. That's one of the things it feels like we can see these things more clearly now that we're carnivore, but heart disease, cancer, all of these things. You just look at processed food going up. On the discussion about children, that's one thing that just really gets me. It's just too so tragic. Younger and younger, getting kids hooked on sugar. I don't know. Sometimes I talk about sugar and people get mad at me, and maybe I'm overly dramatic about it, but I feel like sugar just gets a complete pass when I'm like, what is the redeeming quality of sugar? It's, in my opinion, it's an addictive drug. It lights up the brain on an MRI like cocaine. It rots the teeth. It causes inflammation, leads to type 2 diabetes, learning disorders, depression, anxiety, all of these downstream effects, but it just gets a complete pass. I don't know if you have any thoughts on sugar or getting kids hooked on it from a young age.
It's horrible. And you know what? I'm a history buff, kind of like Dr. Chafee. Do you know the reason we consume so much sugar is because of the legacy of slavery and colonialism? I mean, Britain and France, they controlled the West Indies, Haiti, all these places. And that's where they produce sugar. And they produced mass amounts of sugar from sugar farms, and then they had to sell it. So it was easy to sell, but it wasn't natural. It's not natural for someone in England to consume so much sugar. And there was some statistic that between like 1870 and 1980, the average amount of sugar a citizen of Britain consumed in a day was up like 1,500-fold. So whereas one point it was like, you know, a tiny bit of sugar, now we eat that much sugar in a day. So this is not natural. And it happened because of these huge profits, in some ways similar to today, huge profits that were made by slave owning plantations in colonies. And so there are all these interesting maps of how the sugar trade worked. And so it is incredibly unnatural. And so sometimes people say, well, if we're not supposed to eat sugar, why does it taste so good? Well, because during certain times it was to our advantage to get fat so that we could survive the winter. So, and sugar was so rare that when we did see it, and we would consume it because it was a good protective layer. But that's not the world we live in now. And sometimes sugar today tastes good because it's engineered with every single chemical to make it as addictive as possible.
Yeah, you could say the same argument. If why does cocaine make me feel so good? Then why shouldn't I take it?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Some people that hear about carnivore, the things we're talking about, will say, so you just mean to tell me there's some big conspiracy theory out there and everything I've been told is a lie. The food pyramid's a lie. Eat your vegetables is a lie. Breakfast is the most important meal is a lie. Like, how did we get to this place? What would you say to someone making that argument?
I would say yes. I would say, look, people for hundreds of years thought bloodletting was the way to cure illness. I mean, that's how George Washington died. The guy who first suggested that doctors and nurses should wash their hands, this is in the 1800s, was belittled by all the establishment doctors in the world. In the 60s and 70s, the FDA or whatever that said smoking is good for you. I mean, yes, I don't think it's a conspiracy. I don't think, you know, I think there's some people who know that it's really unhealthy, but they're making so much money from sugar products. And, you know, I think people at Coca-Cola know that this is not good, but you know, it's so profitable. So I don't think it's a big conspiracy, but I think it is something that people just haven't realized. And the truth is some people can be perfectly fine and healthy eating the standard American diet. I mean, we all know people who just never gain weight, who, you know, feel good, look good, high energy, but that's, you know, that's privileged genetics. That's just people who have certain kind of genetics that are fit, that aren't harmed as much by sugar. But it is for the larger population, and for most people, it is extremely unhealthy. So I don't think it's a conspiracy. I just think it's a lack of knowledge, and God willing, we move out of this paradigm. We move out of this way. I mean, I hope it happens quickly, but I'm afraid it's going to happen slowly because, I mean, think about this. I don't know who said this on a podcast, but imagine if everyone was carnivore. 85% of the healthcare system, you know, which is all focused on chronic disease, would not be necessary. And so, but the healthcare is 1/6 of our economy. So millions of people would be out of work. Nobody wants that. Government doesn't want that. I want people to have jobs. So the incentives are so strong to preserve the current system that makes change really, really hard.
Right. Yeah, I get that comment all the time on my channel. What if everyone was carnivore right now? We wouldn't be able to sustain it. And on one hand, I'm like, it'd be an amazing world for those individuals, but it's never going to happen overnight. So I think it's going to be a slow sort of progress changeover, hopefully. But yeah, it's just like when every financial incentive is pointing to people eating more sugar and making bad decisions, this is kind of where we end up with. I don't think it's a big conspiracy either. It's just a whole bunch of poor, a whole bunch of incentives pushing people in this direction. Like you look at every study, don't eat meat. Oh, okay. What am I going to eat then? You end up eating plant-based, end up eating sugar. And then you find out sponsored by Kellogg's on the study. And it's just like every incentive pushes people that way. It's kind of a tough thing for me because my wife and I, we have our small town movie theater. We have a little dog kennel. So I'm totally all for like businesses and making money and that sort of thing. But it's that's why I think the way this is going to change is not by blaming the grocery stores for selling cereal with cartoon characters on the boxes, because it's never going to change. I could do that the rest of my life and they're never going to just say, okay, we're going to take these off the shelf. It really has to be the individual.
Yes.
The individual making the decision.
Grassroots. I mean, that's one of the things you're in a small town, you're a small business owner, you changing in the ground up and you're influencing people in your city. I know that. I remember watched the video when you had the gathering at the Montello Theater. I wanted to go, but I had a bar mitzvah that way. But you're influencing people in that town. And that's where it all starts. It all, in some ways, you know, I've always lived in big cities. It's just how my life has evolved. But I think that true change and bigness is a problem. The bigger we have, the bigger mega corporations who are all treat people as numbers and just focus on the bottom line, that is partially responsible for the problems we have. Big business, big government. It's smaller communities where people know each other and they care about each other and can influence others with small change. That's where it starts. I mean, that's truly where we'll influence other people to embrace this way of eating.
Yeah. And it seems like because carnivore works so well, someone will do it. Like my mom's carnivore for a year now, which is
awesome.
Yeah. It's just amazing. But she's inspiring her peers and people that are seeing her like, wait a minute, what are you doing? And so I feel like it's spreading sort of grassroots that way as well. Individual to individual, that sort of ripple effect, because it's just profound. Some of the changes that people are having, like some of the things I've seen doing this documentary are literally unbelievable. Had I not looked at these people's medical records, Parkinson's disease, and some of the things these people are overcoming, it's just incredible.
So true. You know, and the thing that gets in the way, I think of a lot of people really, I think more people would do this, but the beginning part can be hard and people get fearful. People get fearful. Like my dad did, my dad's in decent shape. And so he's always eating, he eats a lot of meat, but he did carnivore for a while because I influenced him, and his blood pressure went up initially, and his doctor got scared. And so he's sort of backed off. Now he does kind of keto-ish, which is fine. But people get scared. They get scared of the cholesterol. They get scared when their medical statistics don't fit what the conventional norm is. And it's getting people past that initial fear. That's really the hardest part, I think. And then resisting social pressure. I mean, you know, I think you said it in a video once that sort of 16 weeks or 90 days, 60 days. I mean, you got to get past the first hard part. And once you get there, you start to see that it's not as challenging. It's not as hard. You get over that fear. That fear is the big blocker. But once you get on the other side of that fear, it's much easier.
Yeah, so true. Yeah. And it's so easy that it becomes frustrating, right? Because I always have people like, I could never do what you're doing. I'm like, I'm not playing this up or exaggerating. What I am doing is literally the easiest thing ever. I get it. Like starting is hard, but once you're in it, it's so easy. I don't think about what I'm eating. Lots of freedom for something that sounds so restrictive. It's amazing how liberating and how much freedom it seems to have when I'm not constantly thinking about food all the time or what I'm going to eat next sort of thing.
That's right. Yeah.
So what sort of things have you learned as part of doing your YouTube channel and talking to lots of different individuals and just going on there and putting lessons on from yourself? What sort of things have you learned going through that process?
I learned really that the psychological part is the hardest part, that people do struggle a lot. Like I asked some of my viewers once, I think it was a community poll. I said, what's the biggest struggle? What's the hardest part of trying carnivore? And I was really focusing on newer carnivores. And I got two answers overwhelmingly, social pressure and cravings. And so kind of pinpointing those problems, that's been really eye-opening for me. So then I tried to make my videos to address those issues, you know, how dealing with social pressure is. I mean, some of us, you kind of said, yeah, I've always been a little weird. I've always tried to do differently. And I'm kind of the same way. I've always been more of a nonconformist and tried to do things, but not everyone's like that. So kind of trying to put myself in another person's shoes and empathize with that and then come up, offer some techniques and ideas. That's been one thing. A little bit of spirituality. I mean, I think initially, you know, there've been times in having my channel that I thought, no, maybe I should change it. You know, people see Carnivore Rabbi, maybe they think this is a religious channel, or maybe they think it's only for Jewish people. Maybe I should change the name. And then when I brought that up, I did some polls on that. Everyone said, please, no, don't do it. So there is something about spirituality. And when I tell different Bible stories or share something from Jewish tradition, Jewish wisdom, that really resonates with people. So I think that it has made me kind of appreciate some of my own tradition and some of those teaching and these stories. These stories are universal, and they've been around for hundreds and thousands of years because they speak to basic human problems. And the same issues people have embracing change in one area of life, they have in embracing carnivore. So I think part of my own learning is seeing how useful certain stories and ideas can be for new carnivores. And I've tried to share that. I've really tried to bring that wisdom to bear. And you did a video once, is carnivore a cult? And that was fun. And I remember the thumbnail for that video is great. And I mean, no, of course it's not a cult, but there, because it does so much good for us, sometimes we sort of latch onto it as an identity. And you know what? I don't think that's all bad. I think that's good. I think it allows us to experience all of life more fully. You know, in some ways, we think much less about food. As you just said, we think less about food as carnivores. And so it allows us to embrace the other dimensions of life, the relationships. I mean, why do we get together for meals? It's not because of the food all the time. It's because of the conversation and the connection. So when you're not thinking about food, you can focus on what's really important. And I think conveying that lesson, getting people to think less about food, that's been something else I've tried to aim for.
On your YouTube channel, my YouTube channel has been overwhelmingly positive, but you will get negative comments from time to time. It's to be expected. Have you had any of that? And do you have any, response to the concerns around eating meat for ethical reasons or environmental reasons?
Yeah, that was a big thought I had initially, because I do care about the environment. I do care about animals. And, you know, as a rabbi, morality is sort of, you know, part of my identity. And I have had people, but I was very influenced by an author named Lierre Keith. And I read her book, The Vegetarian Myth. And it was very convicting for me that veganism and vegetarianism kills way more animal species, causes much greater damage than the carnivore diet does. And just monocropping, I mean, all the hundreds of thousands of species that live under the earth, and that I really see the carnivore diet as enhancing the environment, enhancing the soil. And I get most of my meat from a farm shop nearby. So I know that my ecological footprint, the the amount, the transport costs and the environmental impact of the food I eat is minimal. So I really feel that there is, I'm doing better for the environment and better for animals. And in some ways, I mean, Lee Erkey talks about this, the world is structured as predator prey. Like that's the way the world is. And at certain point, we will be the prey for the earth. When we are buried and we're in the ground and the earth consumes us and is bringing up the, you know, is pulling the nutrients from our body to nourish the soil when we're buried, we are prey for the predator that is the soil. That's the way that God structured the world. And so I don't feel those moral qualms anymore. And yes, I'll get people that say that, but you know, I just kind of chalk it up to people are sometimes brainwashed. They've been given this message over and over again that veganism is good for the environment. Veganism is the healthy way. Veganism is the moral way. And the more I've learned and explored it, the more I realize how wrong that is.
Is there anything that you've learned on your carnivore journey that if you could go back and tell yourself on day one, that would have been helpful for you?
Yes. The idea of just being, I would have told myself to be more open and comfortable with who I am. When I first, because of my job as a rabbi, I was sort of hesitant to really, you know, if I ever get invited to a lunch, I would sort of say yes. And then I would not eat very much and order something I didn't really want. And then maybe eat something that I didn't really want to eat just to be polite. That was how I acted initially. And then maybe 6 months to a year into it, I just became more open. It was doing so much good for me that I said, I don't want to be embarrassed by this way of eating. I want to be totally honest. So sometimes if people want to go to a place for lunch, I say, no, I'm not. Let's not go there. If you really want to have lunch, this is where we should have it. Or we can get together for coffee. That's totally fine. You know, so I would have told myself that no one really cares all that much about what you eat, you know, in social settings. You can be the weird one, but you're only weird for about a minute and then everyone's fine. And now people in my synagogue, they joke around about it with me. You know, we had this celebration for my 15th anniversary and the guy gave me a really nice gift and he was making an announcement. He said, so I wanted to figure out something. He's saying this to the whole congregation. There's about 500 people there. He said, I wanted to figure out something that Rabbi Moffick would really want. And we know he would like a big fat steak right now, of course, but we wanted to get him a Jewish item. And he just, so being open with who I am and just being comfortable with that. I wish I would have known that earlier, but I'm glad I've learned that now.
Yeah, that's great advice.
Yeah.
I think we often worry so much about what other people think. And in reality, they're kind of thinking about themselves. They really don't care about us too much.
100%.
So, wow, it's almost been an hour already. I've got one more question, if you don't mind. Just
yeah.
One of my, this is more of just a personal question, if I can, asking for some wisdom and advice from you. One of my big struggles I've been having lately is finding good balance. I'm working on this Healing Humanity documentary. It's important to me. Of course, my girls, we were talking earlier, I have triplets plus one. The girls just turned 17. I can't believe how old they are already. It's like life goes by so quickly. I have trouble balancing all of these things. The documentary is taking a big toll. It requires a lot of time. I get comments from my wife a lot. You're on your phone again. But then I look on my phone and it's someone with stage 4 cancer and they're asking how to get more information from Professor Seyfried or these other things that are really important. So I don't know if you have any advice or wisdom in terms of balancing these things out, because it's become a big struggle for me.
Oh, I hear you. Yeah. Carrie, you are such an effective champion of carnivore. So I think everyone kind of wants a piece of you to a degree, and you're passionate and you care about it so much. And so you're willing to give it. And that's hard, because obviously you want to give the most and the best to your family. So I think a couple things. One thing I've noticed watching your videos, when you're at the movie theater, you've got Jen and you've got the girls there with you helping. So with doing as much as you can with them, and you're going to Alaska with one of your daughters, right?
Right. I mean,
do as much of that as possible. Combine the passionate work with family. That's one thing. And you're already doing that, but just keep doing that. And do, you do some great videos with Jen. And then I think also, I know and you know that the documentary is going to be made. You are so committed to this. So it doesn't have to get done immediately all the time. You know, you can take a break from it. You can step back and say, you know what, I'm going to spend this week. I mean, you talked about going on a cruise, right? I mean, those are some great videos. So take those breaks because the documentary is going to be there. You're going to get it done. We all know that. And so that's what I would do. I would maybe try to slow down, knowing that you're not stepping back on your mission, not at all, but you're putting it in the larger context of your life. Mm. And you know what? The truth is, we can always do more work. We can always make more money. Not that this is about money, but I say this sometimes to people, those are unlimited resources. You can always do more work. You can always make more money. You can't create more time. Mm. It's not possible. So right. Savor that time, make it the most meaningful it can be. And that's with your loved ones.
That's awesome. I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
It's definitely something I'm going to try to do more of. In fact, I was just, you hit the nail on the head. I was talking to Jen about that before. I'm like, you should come with when we film this next thing, trying to figure out how to do all of that. So I really appreciate the wisdom and the advice. And absolutely. I can't believe we've been talking for an hour already. This has been wonderful. I've really been enjoying your YouTube channel. I'm going to watch it more. I have a link in the description below, but do you want to shout out or mention anything else before we wrap up?
Oh yeah. I just want to thank you. You've been an inspiration from the value. I remember watching the first video that I saw that you did, Five Stages of Carnivore. And I was thinking, God, this is right on. I want to learn more from this guy. And so to have this conversation with you, it's just been a complete joy and pleasure.
Oh, awesome. Well, I really appreciate it. I really enjoyed you having me on your channel the other day. You had some wonderful questions. I love what you're doing.
Thank you.
Growing our wisdom. It's like one of the most important things in the world. And I feel like I'm getting more wisdom when I'm watching your channel and your videos. So I really appreciate what you're doing over there. So thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.